Hello? Oh, there we go. Someone turned the switch off. Okay, so the very first thing we're going to do is we're going to have Stephen, who's one of our employees, or not really employee, contractor, works for us anyway, give you a quick PSA about the way to do session cookies.
Okay, so yeah, just a brief public service announcement. The standard way to do sessions on a website is you, when a user logs in, you generate a random number and store their session in a hash table with the random number as a key, hand them the random number in a cookie, and then anytime they load a page on your site, they hand you the random number so you can find their session information, verify that they're logged in, and so on, which requires that you hit the file system, your database, whatever, wherever you have the sessions stored. Maybe you have them cached in memory or something, but you can only cache so many sessions, and so often that's a little bit of memory load or else lookup time. And another way you can do it is you can use message authentication code. You take a secret key and the session, and this only works for small sessions. You take the secret key and the session and combine them with a hash function or other message authentication code, and you hand the user the message authentication code along with their session information. And so then when they hit a web page on your site, they'll hand you both their session information and the message authentication code, and you recompute the message authentication code with your secret key, and since it's secret, you can verify that you did, in fact, see that session information before, and that's what you handed them, and they are logged in, and so on. And if you want to do that, you should use a message authentication function called HMAC, which uses a standard cryptographic hash, has performance characteristics that are similar to the characteristics of the underlying hash, and its security is tied very closely to the security of the underlying hash. So if you're going to try to do something fancy like that, just use HMAC. Don't invent your own hash-based message authentication code function. That's stupid. So you should check out HMAC and think about using it for sessions. There's engineering trade-offs there, obviously, but it's another way that you could do it that not many people do it.
So Masuki basically started this summer. It's sort of what happens when you get a few academic misfits together who want to analyze social networks, get some Friendster data, and start looking at it, treating it as a sort of graph theoretic object, looking at the shape of the graph, how nodes are connected, trying to find interesting relationships between people. Quickly, you find that the Friendster graph is sort of lacking a kind of richness to do a lot of really, really interesting social network analysis. So what do a bunch of ambitious geeks do but decide they need to build their own network? So basically, we had this idea that we wanted to build a social network calendar. And there's a lot of reasons why we think that's a really interesting problem, but I'm not going to get into that right now. But along the development process of this, we basically started creating a general platform for sharing information. And the calendar turned into just sort of one instance writing on top of this platform. And really, you can write all sorts of applications on this platform. You could write a photo log, you could write a journaling system, you could put TribeNet on it. All these things would just be instances on top of this general architecture framework. Don't need it yet, so. So along the way, we learned a lot of stuff by looking at a lot of social networks. And we can only really focus on a couple of the things that we think are really important today. One of them being that there seems to be a real lack of privacy and security features on these sites. Generally, in terms of privacy, this stuff is handled on the UI level. You know, they try to hide it from you in whatever way is possible. It's not handled on the architectural level. So in most of these sites, you can go and use various search features and basically kind of mine your way into information you're really not supposed to have. The other thing that we think is really, really important is you really need a language of assertions. You need a secure way to talk about the relationships between objects in your system. I'm going to hand this over to John now.
Okay, so we have a system that's a calendar. So there's two. There's an interesting class of things where we want you to be able to have say you have a band, you want to put an event on your calendar, and you want that event to be able to propagate to as many people who might actually show up, because you're trying to get publicity, you're trying to cover the costs of the gig that you're putting on and all that kind of stuff. This is in contention with another kind of event you might want to create, where you want to create an event such that, like a birthday party, where you only actually want your close friends to know about it and see it, and so that the whole world doesn't end up showing up to your birthday party. So we've built a system that handles this kind of case, and we're going to demonstrate the way our security model handles this kind of situation and can handle both these cases. Matt's going to give you this demo, and after that I'm going to describe the technical pinnings of how that actually ends up working.
All right, so in the system here, we have, right now, we have three people, Alice, Bob, and Carol, who are actually the only internet users in the whole world, apparently, so everybody uses them as examples. And the first thing we're going to do, so here down at the bottom, Carol is set to share her calendar with Bob, and Bob shares her calendar with Alice. So the first thing we're going to do, Carol is going to add a concert into the system.
What's going on? Oh, you never plugged in the Ethernet cable.
Ah, yes. Is it just going to
work? Yes, it should just work.
Gonna work. All right. Much better. Okay. And then, so this is an event that Carol wants, so Carol's got maybe she's in a band or whatever. She wants people to know about this event. She wants it to kind of spread by word of mouth. So she's going to set the availability of this to public. All right, so that anyone in the network can discover this event. And then she's going to save it. All right, so there's the event. And if she goes back to her calendar, there's the concert. So now we're going to look at the network as viewed by Bob. Which is over here. So now if Bob... Yeah, there's Bob. Now if Bob reloads his calendar, he should see the concert. And if he looks at the concert, he sees, lo and behold, that Carol is going. And that will become important later. Now let's go over to Alice, who's also on the network, but is not directly connected, as you can see. Now when she reloads her calendar, see if it's there, and it's not there. And, okay. Well, so what I'm showing is how an event like this would propagate through the system. So now, Bob's looking at this event. He says, oh, this looks really interesting. I'm going to go. So he says, okay, I'll be there. And this has various options in it. So now, it's supposed to be on. Yes, okay. Now if Bob looks at the concert, he sees that he is going and Carol is also going. And now we're going to look at the system again from Alice's point of view. Okay, now Alice can see the concert. Now, you were going to explain, why don't you explain the separation of attendance and...
Why did you finish this bit? You click on the event. Okay.
Well, no, I'll click on the event. That's right. Okay. Remember, this is the same event that Bob was looking at before, but Alice can only see that Bob is going because Alice is only connected to Bob. She's not connected all the way out to Carol. So we have... the information about the event has propagated through the network, but the information about Carol's attendance has not. So
the way that this example works is that what we've realized is that there's actually, what you write on calendars that you hang on your wall is you don't actually write information about events on your calendars usually. What you actually write out, you write information about what you're going to do or attendance in events that you're going to attend or are interested in. So what we've been able to do, what we've done here is we separated out the difference between permissions, permissions on the attendance and permissions on the event itself. So when Carol originally made the event, she created it with the event as public, but her attendance information on the event was still only group level attendance. And since Alice is not in her group, Alice can't see her attendance information. But since the event itself is is publicly readable, when Alice could see Bob's attendance information, she could also see what the event was but could only see that Bob was doing it. When Alice adds it to her calendar, if she wants to, anybody who's to the left of her will be able to see the event, but not Bob or Carol's information, because that information is not available to them because they're not in the group.
Okay. So the other thing that needs to happen in a system like this, if it's going to be really feasible, you need to be able to make events that don't propagate through the system. So say, for example, you're Bob, and you want to have a birthday party, and you want to do the kind of, you know, just invite your friends, but you don't want to invite everyone, and you don't want someone to say, hey, this is cool, I'm going to it, and you don't want lots of people to find out about your personal birthday party. So here we go to the calendar, and we'll say Bob's birthday, and that is going to be happening on Monday night. And then so this event, Bob doesn't want it to propagate through the system. So instead of making a public event like we did with the concert, we make a group event. And then we're going to make sure, we come up here, and we have all these groups, but Bob only wants to invite his friends. And you can see that's only Alice right now. And so we save that. So now we'll look at the system from Alice's point of view. And we'll go to the whole week. And there's Bob's birthday party. Because, as you can see on the graph, which is cut off, you can see that, so that the dotted arrow there, that's not enough. That's supposed to represent that that Alice is in Bob's group of friends. Alice can see this birthday party. But and the important thing here is, even though Bob has said it's okay for Carol to share his calendar.
You need to reload the page to show that.
Oh, yeah. Right. Even though Bob has said it's okay for Carol to share his calendar, she's not in his group of friends, so she shouldn't be able to see it here, and it's not there. Okay. Okay. So I want to talk just briefly about something else. Okay, so let's go to Carol's profile, and let's go to someone that she knows, and let's go to this. So this page talks about is where Carol talks about her relationship with Bob, right? And I want to talk about why we decided to, or some decisions we made when we decided to split up our network like this. So all the existing social networks have introduce a new kind of awkward social situation, which is the unwanted friend request, which I'm sure everyone is familiar with, at least from one side or the other. Now, when you think about this, it's really kind of a stupid situation. And how often does somebody come up to you on the street, an acquaintance, and say, hey, are you my friend? It's not something people do in real life. It's not something people are kind of familiar with dealing with. It's not a common social situation, so they kind of don't know what to do. And it's actually really, really dumb to use the term friend to describe the connections on these kinds of systems, because it means something different to everyone else, and it has all these connotations. It has connotations of coolness and trustworthiness and all this stuff.
Maybe it was written in C++.
That's okay. All right. So instead of using the term friend, since we can have objects with permissions in our system, we can have public and private certifications. So here this shows we have a public certification, which just means you know this person. And we picked that because there's not a lot of connotations there. You can know someone and not really like them very much, whatever. You know, there's no endorsement there. There's no it's not really a faux pas there's no social cost to say, yeah, I know this guy, even though he's kind of dumb, whatever. And then we can have these private certifications as well. So we can make groups like friend or whatever groups you want. And then we can also say, make settings and say how different kinds of information propagates through the network. So here, actually this would be better from Bob's point of view, but so here Caroline's not friends with Bob, so if she makes a friend event, it doesn't propagate. But she's willing to share calendar information with him. All right. So by separating this stuff out, we get a bunch of things. One, we get a public network of nodes certs that's actually useful because the meaning of, you know, this person knows that person is consistent across pretty much across everyone, or it's more or less consistent. It's much more consistent than the meaning of friends. So we get much better information about who's actually connected to who. And in addition, the settings that the user can make are much more useful to themselves because they can make all these private choices about what to allow people to see and what not to allow people to see without worrying about the social cost of that. And third, we completely get rid of the awkward social situation where you're like, ah, this guy wants to be my friend, but I don't really know. I don't really know if I want to do that. So now I want to take a step back and talk about... I'm afraid of it going to sleep. I want to talk about general design philosophy. So we were tempted at very early stages of the design to try and make a system that was really smart, that would kind of figure out who was a good friend and who wasn't a good friend based on what they were doing in the network and what you were doing in the network and whatever information it could use. The problem with that is that it would fail in kind of mysterious and unexpected ways if we got it wrong. This way, we give the user some simple, powerful tools, and they can...
messaging and wiki.
Right, yeah. We give the user some simple and powerful tools, and they can solve the problems themselves. We don't have to write complicated code to do it, and we don't have to worry about doing it wrong in certain cases. People are just in charge of what goes on.
You need to mention the wiki and the messaging. Those are the simple, powerful tools.
Those are other... Yeah. Okay, so some other cool and simple and powerful tools that we have. So here, if we look at concert, the whole system is designed all the way through with to export XML as well. So we can just type in none, and here we have the raw XML of this event. You can get any object out of our system in XML. So if you have a bright idea about some cool service you want to write and you want to use our events or you want to use our social network or whatever, you can get the XML like this and then build your service on top of it. And eventually we're going to add in things like iCal export for your events and for your calendar and FOF and RSS and all sorts of stuff. So, and then lastly, we're going to have on all events and on all objects in the system, we have wiki-style discussions that you can attach to every event on every object in the system, so that if there's something in our formalism of the system, if there's something that we don't capture, you can just put a note in there, and so the user, if the system doesn't measure up to some new use that people have for it, people can just fix it. They can just put in text explaining how it actually works. So, okay, and now I'm going to turn it over to John. He's going to talk about the architecture.
Okay, so I guess I don't really need the computer. He says also that you can put a wiki on everything. What's important is that actually every object in our system has permission bits on it. And so the way is that we have separated events and attendance, everything in our thing is considered an object, and the permissions go all the way to the bottom. We sort of represent everything as a hierarchy of objects, and the permissions are on the lowest level of those objects. And the kind of permission system we have is in some ways fairly standard in that we have user, group, and world permissions on raw objects, and those have each three permission bits. They have read, write, and a third permission bit, which I will explain in a minute, called cert. The important thing to know that's different about most group architectures is most group architectures to find groups in a sort of centralized way. If you're familiar with Unix or whatever, you know, the system administrator decides what the groups are and can set that kind of thing and describes groups attendance. All our systems, the groups are all defined with respect to the user. I mean, and this is actually really obvious. I mean, if you're going to find a group of your friends, you obviously don't want a global group of friends, so everybody has the same group of friends. But it also means if you have, like, if you just, you can build new groups for yourself that aren't by default listed in our list of groups. So if you want to have a group of people I go drinking with, it's not the same group of people that your friend goes drinking with, even if you do happen to meet together. So all the objects have these, so you can set read and write on all these objects, and this other thing that was important is cert. So representationally, you know, you need some data representation of what the world looks like for your application to be driven from. And so that's what certs are for us. So when we say that somebody is a friend, or somebody can see my calendar, or I know this person, that's just a certification. They can also be things like, this is the primary photo of me, or I really like this photo, or something like that. What cert permission means is that you can create a cert under certain circumstances. The certs have two IDs, the left-hand side and the right ID, which are just the two objects that the certification is between, and then the certification type, like friend or favorite picture or whatever. The cert bit means that you can create a certification where the object in the left-hand ID is the object you have cert permission on. So basically, we control who can make certs with objects in the left-hand ID relative to a particular object. This allows us to do all of this neat stuff inside this fairly simple permission model. I think that's basically what our talk is. So if people have questions, we are ready for that.
Going back to what you were talking about earlier about public and semi-private events, my question is, I understand the need for these more widespread events because then I can promote an event that with more people than I actually know. But if I'm going to set up an event just for my friends, why don't I just email them?
Well, so this calendar that you've seen here, we were worried about that as well, like, because we want these events to get into here. I mean, you can just email them if you like. But the calendar that we have here, I mean, it looks kind of, you know, it looks kind of pretty, and it's because it is. It actually supports all the functionality that you'd want to have instead of your PIM desktop calendar situation. So we have repeating event support. We, you know, we have locations. We have all this kind of information. Everything you'd really expect from at least, you know, a PDA at minimum. This gives you that all that, so you can just use it as your regular calendar. We also plan to in the near future. You notice that when he added event in, he said, you know, tomorrow night or Monday night, and it just figured out what that meant. And one of the reasons, the motivations for having that natural language interface was that we also want to integrate with SMS handsets directly. So when you decide you hear about an event or want to invite your all friends to an event, you can be standing on a street corner with your cell phone and just send a message to our system, and that will automatically happen.
How does your calendar compare with the Yahoo version? For example, you can have groups. You can have Yahoo groups, and the group can have a calendar, and it's shared.
Okay, so the Yahoo group calendars like sort of have like some permissions, but you only get to choose whether somebody you get three choices. You get whether a person can read your calendar, or whether a person you can decide whether an event on your calendar is public, or whether some group of people that are not the public can read and write it. So they have some very weak permission stuff.
It's much larger granularity than this. All this permission stuff happens on a per object level.
I mean, basically, they don't have a lot. It's not very complex with what you can actually express from the permission standpoint, and they don't have the nice features to understand the separation between the attendance and the event, so you can't get event propagation through their calendar system. Basically, if you look at their calendar for a little bit, you'll realize it really doesn't do a whole lot.
And our permission model works for all objects on our system.
This looks really spiffy, but right now I keep my PIM data in text files in CVS because it supports disconnected operation really well. How well does Mosiki support disconnected operation?
So we're going to hopefully fairly soon have the SMS integration, so you'll be able to query and update your calendar via SMS. As well, by the time we actually let people start using this, we're going to have iCalendar export, So if you have any kind of PIM, which is pretty much all of them these days, that's going to support the iCalendar format, you'll be able to update to that as well. I'm also looking at like SyncML and other things like that. So we really want to be very heavy on letting you get your data. One of our fundamentals as a company is that we really believe you own your data, and we want to make it as easy for you as possible to get your data when you want it.
Yeah, my question is about tentative states. So what happens in your situation? You've got, 500 parties you can attend tonight, and some of them are your friends and some of them aren't. How do you do tentative states and then sort of let other people know so that over time you all kind of coalesce into a common event, because there are a whole bunch of you that are tentative. And the other question is, how do you prevent then scraping, or how does somebody publishes an event? Like, was it Carol that published the public event?
Yes.
Yes.
So she only saw that Bob was attending, even though Alice might also be attending. So she doesn't see Bob and one other. She just sees one. So she can go, well, I'm not, if she was actually tentative on this, she would know that actually there are a fair number of people going. So there's two aspects.
We could change it a bit, but the real worry is that we're very worried about people accidentally leaking information that's important. And on the I'm tentative thing, your attendance is not just I'll be there. It's I don't know whether I'm going to be there. I'm just interested. I can't make it. So you can say a few different things. So for that, like just interested thing, you might go. You can say I don't know yet. The other feature that we're going to add fairly soon that we haven't yet is we're going to allow you to have sort of group voting or polls, where you can basically, if you wanted to organize with a group of people that all want to do for different things, and you said, I want to do something with you five friends, but you all have all different interests tonight, and I do. Let's see what's the most common thing. You'll be able to put all the things, everybody will be able to put things onto the ballot, and then it'll just be an open approval voting ballot, so people can then look at what the results are, and then, so we're not going to give you like a plurality vote, say who the winner is. We're just going to say how everybody voted and what the interest is, and then you can discuss and figure out what you're really going to do.
Looking at your website, it seems that this is sort of a closed source thing, and I'm just sort of curious about your business model, and are you trying to make money through advertising?
So you see what it says right here? Don't know yet? Yeah. That's really our answer to the thing. The answer is we'd like to release all of this stuff as open source, but the fact is that we've got about $80,000 in debt to support ourselves for the last 6 months while we were all writing this, and we'd like to recover that debt at the very least. No, not yet. Actually, we have released one bit of source. We didn't show you the account creation, but involved in the account creation, we suggest the password for you, and we use the FIPS pronounceable password generator for that, and we had Steven implement a Python version of that for us. So if you actually go to dev.mosugi.com, you can get that FIPS pronouncer password generator, plus there's a collection of other ones of them that we didn't implement also there as well in other languages.
And we have time for two more questions.
So quite a few of you have written about private information leaking.
Yes.
And there seems to be a sort of social private information leaking here a bit, in that it's fairly easy to deduce that you're not on someone's calendar spreading list
What you can deduce is over time you can see that you're not on someone's calendar because they keep going to events that you don't show up at. But that's how it happens in the real world as well, and that's admittedly a really hard problem. I mean, and so I understand your complaint that somebody can guess that they're not being invited to events.
I think it's more about excuse limitation, right? That usually in these sort of situations you can go, oh, I'm so sorry, I forgot you to put you on this list. Whereas by the process of automating this, it's perfectly obvious that you've gone, no, I want this person never to find out. And I mean, I'm not saying that it's something. It might be something that's hard to work around, apart from like randomly omitting people, like putting chaff into the whole setup. So I'm sorry, our program doesn't work very well.
It's true that it's. I don't think our system actually leaks that information.
Right.
I mean, you're right. It does create the changes the social situation slightly. So when somebody guesses, they can guess different pieces of information. We're not actually leaking it. If anybody's heard the stuff I've talked about, I'm talking the stuff I've been discussing. Is actual real leakages of information, not just being able to guess at them, being able to have confirmed answers. We do create somewhat of an extra complication to that social situation, but the hope is, if what we give you is enough value to make that extra leakage worth it for you. You have to decide whether we're providing you value.
Okay, I guess I have a question then, which is there anything you can pull out of this through automation? Have you considered something, anything that you can pull out of this through spidering?
Pull out of what?
Out of your system.
Well, since there's permissions on all these objects, we have an XML interface. If you have an account on it, you can walk them and look at the XML.
And one final quick question.
Okay, it's reasonably obvious to me from what you've said that Carol can make her attendance at the conference public so that anybody can see that she's attending.
No, actually, the UI doesn't let you. In the system, the permission system, you can. But really, you know, we've spent a lot of time being really worried about people being stalked and other kinds of things like that. And it was basically our decision that there is very few cases where it's a good idea to say exactly where you're going to be. And so we don't let you do that in the formal architecture of the system unless you go through some third-party thing or, you know, hack on our system. And you can create that stuff in our database. We won't stop you, but we're not going to give you that option in the UI. If you really, really want to tell people that, you can send them a message and say, send your friends a message and say, hey, I'm going to be there. Or you'll be able to attach these messages to the events, and you could put a public message on it and say, hey, I'm going there. But we want to raise the bar so you never do that accidentally and not realize what you're doing.
Thank you.